The Personal History of David Copperfield by Charles Dickens.
In language old excess imparts the power they feel so well. There may perhaps in such a scene some recollection be.
Part 10. I Have Loved You All My Life.
Of days that heavens have been, and you'll remember me.
Now, Mr. and Mrs. Micawber, have you thought any more about that proposal of mine?
Madam, to borrow the language of an illustrious poet, our boat is on the shore and our bark is on the sea.
Good. A sensible decision. Well taken.
With respect to the pecuniary assistance enabling us to launch our frail canoe on the ocean of enterprise, I have reconsidered the proposition I originally submitted, notes of hand at 12, 18, and 24 months. I am apprehensive that such an arrangement might not allow time for the requisite amount of something to turn up. I therefore beg to propose an alternative. 18, 24, and 30 months. Shall we now leave Mr. Traddles to communicate all relevant business matters to Miss Wickfield and her friends? Should you require our presence, Mr. Traddles, you will find us in the adjoining room.
Thank you, Mr. Micawber. Now, Agnes, my dear, let us attend to your affairs. Mr. Traddles...
I'm happy to say, Miss Trotwood, that Mr. Wickfield has very much improved. Relieved of his anxieties, he's hardly the same person, and he's helped us a great deal in making some things clear we might have found hopeless without him.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you now that having sorted out a great mass of unintentional confusion in the first place and willful falsification in the second, it's clear that Mr. Wickfield can wind up his business with no deficiency or defalcation whatever.
I thank God for that.
But the surplus left him will be very small. Too small to support him. I suppose the house to be sold, even in saying this.
Dear Mr. Traddles, I can wish for nothing more once Papa is free with honour. Mm. I'll take our future on myself.
Oh, but Agnes, my dear, have you thought how?
I have. If I rent the dear old house and keep a school, I'll be useful and happy.
If you're sure that it's best for your father to relinquish his business.
I am.
Hmm. Then we go next, Miss Trotwood, to that property of yours.
Mr. Traddles, if it's gone, I can bear it. And if it isn't, I'll be glad to get it back.
It was originally £8,000 consols?
Right.
I can't account for more than five.
Thousand? Or pounds?
£5,000.
It was all there was. I sold three myself. One to pay for Trotwood's education, and the other two I have by me.
Then I'm delighted to say we've recovered all the money.
How?
You believed it had been misappropriated by Mr. Whitfield.
Indeed I did.
Miss Trotwood.
Hush, I said never a word.
Please.
Hush, Agnes.
It was sold by Uriah Heep. Mr. Wickfield was persuaded by that rascal that he'd taken the money to conceal other deficiencies and difficulties.
My poor friend, Mr. Wickfield, wrote me a mad letter charging himself with robbery. So I paid him a visit and burnt his letter in front of him. I told him if he could ever write to me and himself, to do it. And if not, to keep his own counsel for his daughter's sake. Do you tell me you have really got the money back?
Yes. We had so much against Uriah, he couldn't escape.
And what has become of him now?
He left here with his mother by the night coach for London, cursing me and Mr. Micawber to the heavens.
And now, touching Mr. Micawber, What would you give him?
Well, I advise you to give him a sum, not too large, in money.
And we will also pay his passage and outfit his family.
Yes. Let him pay the amount off, as he suggests. It'll be good for him to have the responsibility. Miss Trotwood, there is one other thing.
Hmm?
I recall that Uriah mentioned your husband. Perhaps it was mere purposeless impertinence?
No.
Ah, there really was such a person.
Yes.
Can I do anything to help?
No. But thank you many times. Let us have Mr. and Mrs. Micawber back now, and we will tell them the arrangements we propose.
Next day, my aunt and I returned to London. We went back to her house, not to mine, and before going to bed we sat alone, as of old.
Trot?
Yes, aunt?
Do you really want to know what I have had on my mind lately?
Indeed I do. If there was ever a time I didn't want you to have a sorrow I couldn't share, it's now.
You have had enough sorrow of your own without my little miseries. That was my only motive in keeping anything from you.
I know that. But tell me now.
I need your company tomorrow. Will you travel a little way with me in the morning?
Of course. Gladly.
At 9. I will tell you then. This is a cheerless morning for you, Trot. A hospital and a funeral. We're taking him to Hornsey. He was born there.
When did he die, Aunt?
The night before we went to Canterbury. This time he knew it was his last illness. He asked them to send for me, Trot. He was sorry then. Very sorry. I was with him a good deal.
Aunt. Dear Aunt. I wish you'd confided in me. To bear this alone.
Oh, Trot. You had your own sorrows. No one can harm him now. 36 years ago, this day, I was married to him. God forgive us all.
Oh,
he was a fine-looking man when I married him. And he was sadly changed.
After the relief of tears, she became composed. Her nerves were a little shaken, she said, or she wouldn't have given way. God forgive us all. And now I come to an event in my life so indelible, so awful, that from the beginning of my story I have seen its shadow growing longer and longer as it came nearer, like a great tower in a plain. For years after it happened, I dreamed of it often. I dream of it sometimes to this hour. I had written to Emily. I told her I had seen Ham, and I told her of his message. And I sent the letter to Mr. Peggotty.
Master Davy, I give Emily a letter. She wrote this here for Ham, and begged of me for you to read it, and if you see no hurt in it, to be so kind as to take charge on it.
Have you read it?
Yes, sir.
Ham, I have got your message. What can I write to thank you for your good and blessed kindness to me? I have put the words close to my heart. I shall keep them till I die. Goodbye forever, in this world. In another world, if I am forgiven, I may wake a child again and come to you. All thanks and blessings. Farewell. Evermore.
Master Davy, may I tell her as you'll be so kind as to take charge, Aunt?
Yes. I'll go down to Yarmouth tonight.
Oh, sir, she wouldn't ask that.
The journey's nothing. There's time for me to go and come back before the ship sails. I'm restless. It'll help me. Then I can tell her before you go that Ham has her letter.
Oh, thank you, sir. That would be a kindness to both of them.
That's a very remarkable sky, coachman. I don't remember to have ever seen one like it.
Not I. Not equal to it. That's winged, sir. There'll be mischief done at sea, I expect, before long.
As the night advanced, the clouds closed in and densely overspread the whole sky. It came on to blow harder and harder.
Coachman, sir! Are we safe? I've never known such a wind. I fear we'll be blown over.
We must trust in the Lord, sir. We changed horses at Ipswich. We're many hours late, but we're near there now. This is a storm like I've never seen. But I hope that we can get to Yarmouth tomorrow morning.
Long before we came to the coast, sea spray was upon our lips. The mighty wind was blowing dead on shore, and over miles of flat country round Yarmouth, the waters were out. Every sheet and puddle lashed its banks and had its little breakers setting heavily towards us. And so at last, we came to the sea. The street outside the old inn was strewn with sand and seaweed. I made my way to the beach.
Oh, God preserve him! God save him!
What's the matter?
My husband's out in a herring boat in this sea.
Let me help you home.
No, I couldn't wait under a roof while he's in such danger.
The tremendous sea confounded me. As the high watery walls came rolling in, they looked as if the least would engulf the town. When the billows dashed themselves to pieces, every fragment seemed possessed by the full might of the whole. I seemed to see a rending and upheaval of all nature.
Boatman,
sir.
Ham Peggotty. Do you know him?
Everyone know Ham, God bless him. We won't find him, eh? His yard sent to the roadstuff for to repair his ship.
Will he come back tonight?
Oh, not in this air, gale. No more we set out in this.
I went back to the old inn and spent an anxious day, disturbed by the growing violence of the storm and the tumult of my own unhappy thoughts. At night I could not sleep at first, but finally fatigue overcame me, and I fell into a dream of a siege of some town where cannons were roaring at the gates.
What? What time is it?
9 in the morning, sir. There's a wreck, close by.
What? A wreck?
A schooner from Spain, they say. Do you make haste, sir, if you want to see her?
They told me there was a wreck.
Last year, sir. To the land.
See? Great heavens!
She was close in on us. One mast was broken off. It lay over the side in a maze of sail and rigging. And as the ship rolled, it beat against it with a dreadful violence. And now the sea had swept over it and carried men, spars, casks and planks into the boiling surge.
She's fighting amidships now! Hey, there's one mast still standing!
It's Warren, I'm still alive! Look, clinging to the rigging!
There were indeed four men there as he spoke. One of them, the man that had been most active before the fatal wave, a tall figure with long, curling hair. As she rolled, her bell sounded. It seemed a death knell, for once again the sea swept over her, and two men were gone. The two remaining clung to the rigging.
What can we do? Those two poor lost creatures. We can't let them perish.
I don't know as we can do, Arthur. The lifeboat was manned and ours said they could do nothing. Their death end would help, save a man wading out with a rope to them two lost souls. The lake is not, they still go, and he go with them.
Do you fetch your rope, lad?
Ham!
Lost baby!
No! No, don't let him go! Good people, there's no hope. It would be murder!
Oh, no, the man's gone! God bless his soul. There's just one poor sailor now.
Mass David, if my time is come, just come. If it, I'll find it. Lord above, bless you, and bless all.
Mates, make me ready! I am going off!
Help!
room.
I was swept away from him. Mayen ran with ropes and hid him from me. Then I saw him standing alone, a rope in his hand, another round his body, which several men held slack on the shore. Ham watched the sea until there was a great retreating wave. Then he dashed in after it. He made for the wreck, rising with the hills, falling with the valleys. The distance was nothing, but the power of the sea and wind made the strife deadly. The solitary man at the mast waved to us. His action brought an old remembrance to my mind. Ham was so near now. One more vigorous stroke and he'd be clinging to the wreck.
God save his soul!
A vast green hillside of water had rolled in from beyond the ship. And now the ship was gone. And Ham, where was Ham? They hauled him in. They drew him to my very feet. Battered. Insensible. He was carried to the nearest house, and I went with them. They tried to revive him. But that generous heart had been stilled forever. I stayed until hope was abandoned and all was done.
Mr. Copperfield, sir. Ben, this is a terrible thing.
So tis, sir. So tis.
But will you come out to the beach?
To the beach?
Yes. There's a body come ashore.
Do I know it?
He answered nothing, but he led me to the shore. And there, where Emily and I, two children, had looked for shells, where some lighter fragments of the old boat blown down last night had been scattered by the wind, there, among the ruins of the home he had wronged, I saw Steerforth, lying with his head upon his arm, as I had often seen him lie in far-off days at school. They carried him to the inn. They knew it was not right to take him to the quiet room where Ham lay. The care of all that was left lay with me. Mr. Omer arranged a conveyance to take him to London. I travelled with it. The bleak night and the open country surrounded me, and the ashes of my youthful friendship. On a mellow autumn day, about noon, I arrived in Highgate. I walked the last mile to his mother's house, thinking of what I had to do. The little parlourmaid let me in.
I beg your pardon, sir. Are you ill?
I have been distressed. I'm very tired.
Was anything the matter, sir? Mr. James is...
Hush. Yes. Something has happened that I have to tell Mrs. Steerforth. She is at home.
Yes, sir. She's in her room. She keeps to her room now, sir. She sees no company. But she'll see you. Miss Dartle is with her. What shall I tell her?
Give her my card and tell her I'll wait.
In a few minutes, I stood before her. At her chair was Rosa Dartle.
I'm sorry to see you are in mourning, sir.
I am unhappily a widower.
You're very young to know so great a loss. I'm grieved to hear it. I hope time will be good to you.
I hope time will be good to all of us. Dear Mrs. Steerforth, we must all trust to that in our heaviest misfortunes. James?
My son is ill. You have seen him?
I have.
Are you reconciled? What are you telling me?
Mrs. Steerforth, please, please try to bear what I have to say.
What?
The night before last was dreadful at sea. If the vessel that was seen should really be the one that your son...
Say what you mean. He's dead.
Rosa!
Now is your pride appeased. Now has he made atonement with his life. Do you hear me? His life. Look at me. Look at your dead child's handiwork. Do you remember when he did this? Disfigured me for life. Look at me. Marked until I die with his high displeasure. And moan and groan for what you made him start for. Be silent, you. Look at me. Proud mother of a proud false son. Moan for your nurture of him. Moan for your corruption of him. Moan for your loss of him. Moan for mine. You resent his self-will, his haughty temper. You reared him to be what he was and stunted what he should have been. Are you rewarded now?
Oh, startle for shame.
I have been silent all these years. I will speak now. I loved him better than you ever loved him. If I had been his wife, I could have been a slave of his caprices for a word of love a year. You were exacting, proud, and selfish. My love would have been devoted, would have trod your poultry whimpering underfoot when he was freshest and truest. He loved me. Yes, he did. When he grew weary, I grew weary. We fell away from each other without a word. Perhaps you saw it and weren't sorry. Moan. Moan for what you made him, not for your love. I tell you, time was, I loved him better than you ever did.
Stop. Can't you feel for this afflicted mother?
Who feels for me?
And if his faults...
Faults? Who dares malign him? He had a soul worth millions of the friends to whom he stooped.
No one can have loved him better than I did. I meant to say, if you have no compassion for his mother...
I loved him. A curse on you. It was in an evil hour that you ever came here. A curse upon you. Go.
Rosa knelt before Mrs. Steerforth, who stayed rigid and staring. She took her in her arms then and kissed her, rocking her on her bosom like a child. So I left them.
I'll never leave you. Never. We both loved him.
Later in the day, I returned, and we laid him in his mother's room. I went through the dreary house and darkened the windows. The windows of the chamber where he lay, I darkened last. I lifted up the leaden hand and held it to my heart, and all the world seemed death and silence. One thing more I had to do, to conceal what had happened from Mr. Peggotty and Emily. I wanted them to go on their voyage in happy ignorance. I enlisted Mr. Micawber's help in this, and he undertook to intercept any newspaper that might betray the terrible events of the storm to Mr. Peggotty. It cost me a great deal to pretend to my old friend that I had delivered Emily's letter to Ham, and that all was well. The Micawber family were lodged in a little tumble-down public house near Hungerford Stairs. We all gathered in their room the night before they were due to sail.
At what time do you leave, Mr. Micawber?
Madam, I am informed that we must be on board before 7 tomorrow morning.
Oh, as soon as that? Is it a sea-going fact, Mr. Peggotty?
Tis so, ma'am. She'll drop down the river with that there tide. If Master Davy and my sister come aboard at Gravesend, afternoon the next day, they'll see the last on us.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have composed a moderate portion of that beverage peculiarly associated in our minds with the roast beef of Old England. In short, punch. Under ordinary circumstances, I should scruple to entreat the indulgence of Miss Trotwood and Miss Wickfield, but...
I will drink happiness and success to you with the utmost pleasure.
And so will I.
Ladies, I am most grateful. Miss Trotwood.
Thank you.
Miss Wickfield.
Thank you.
Miss Copperfield. Mr. Peggotty.
Thank you, sir.
Emma, my dear.
Yeah, Micawber, but why are you giving us pint pots? There are wine glasses enough for all of us.
The luxuries of the old country we abandon. The denizens of the forest cannot expect to participate in the refinements of the land of the free.
Oh.
Mr. Micawber!
Yes, my lad?
You're worried downstairs!
Oh, I have a presentiment it's a member of my family.
If so, my dear... As the member of your family has kept us waiting for a considerable period, perhaps the member may now wait my convenience.
Micawber, at such a time as this...
It is not meet that every nice offence should bear its comment. Emma, I stand reproved. The member of your family shall have no genial warmth frozen by me.
I hope, too, that in some branches of our family... We may live again in the old country.
Oh, my love.
Do not frown, Mr. Micawber. I do not now refer to my own family, but to our children's children. When our race attains to eminence and fortune, I should wish that fortune to flow into the coffers of Britannia.
My dear, Britannia must take her chance. She's never done much for me, so I've no particular wish on the subject.
Micawber, there you are wrong. From the hour of embarkation, you should feel your position. My dear Miss Trotwood, I wish Mr. Micawber to be the Caesar of his own fortunes. I wish him to stand upon the vessel's prow and say, "This country I am come to conquer. Have you honors? Have you riches? Have you posts? A profitable pecuniary emolument. Let them be brought forward. They are mine." And in feeling his position, he will strengthen, not weaken, his connection with Britain.
Dearest wife.
Mr. Micawber will be a page of history, and as such he ought to be represented in the country that gave him birth.
My love, I am always willing to defer to your good sense. Heaven forbid I should grudge my native country any portion of the wealth that may be accumulated by our descendants.
On the afternoon of the next day, my old nurse and I travelled to Gravesend. When we came aboard, Mr. Peggotty was waiting for us on deck, and took us below to a strange scene, confined and dark, full of people, baggage, bundles and barrels.
Well, Master Davy, is there any last word, any forgotten thing afore we pass?
One thing? Martha, what can we do for her?
Martha... Do you look over there, sir, with Mrs. Gummidge?
What? You're taking her with you.
Heaven bless you.
And now, is there any other word, sir, from Ham?
Ham asked me to give you, last thing before we parted, the loving duty and thanks of the orphan. You were always more than a father to.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Anna. It's many miles and many, many years as a partner now.
Oh, that it is, Clara. Now, never you cry, my dear. There's them in England as needs you, and it's as dear as them that's sailing away. Will you be going to Yarmouth again, Master Davy? Not special, like, but if so be as you should see how.
I... Yes.
Well, tell him. Tell him from me and from one as is very dear to him. Tell him though we be far away, there's no distance as Em's love. He's always in our thoughts.
He is always in our loving thoughts. Will you tell him that?
Yes, Emily. God bless you always.
So, that's goodbye, sir.
Goodbye, Mr. Peggotty. May God protect you both.
I took Peggotty on my arm and turned away. We took leave of the Micawbers and waited at a little distance to see the ship wafted on its course. It was a calm, radiant sunset, a sight at once so beautiful, so mournful, and so hopeful. The glorious ship, lying with all the life on board her, crowded at the bulwarks, bareheaded and silent. Silent only for a minute. The sails rose to the wind. The ship began to move. And then, as the ship passed, I saw her at her uncle's side, waving her last goodbye to me. Oh, Emily, beautiful and drooping, cling to him with all the trust of thy bruised heart, for he has clung to you with all the might of his great love.
Goodbye. God bless you all.
Bye, Master Davy. Bye, Clara.
Bye.
Bye.
Surrounded by the rosy light, they solemnly passed away. The night had fallen on the Kentish hills when we were rowed ashore, and fallen darkly upon me. I went away from England, and little by little, the consciousness of all I had lost came upon me. I mourned for my child wife, taken from her blooming world so young. I mourned for Steerforth, who might have won the love and admiration of thousands, as he'd won mine long ago. I mourned for the broken heart that had found rest in the stormy sea, and for the wandering remnants of the simple home where I'd heard the night wind blowing when I was a child. When I look back on this time of my life, I seem to be recalling a dream. I passed through palaces, cathedrals, temples, and castles, but I saw them as a dreamer might, hardly conscious of what was before me. I had been away nearly a year when I arrived in Switzerland, where a packet of letters from home awaited me, and in the evening before sunset, I took them into the valley to read. The first letter was from Agnes.
I know how great your sadness must be, but I know too that you have a nature that will turn sorrow to good. Through your grief you will be strengthened and exalted. I am so proud of you. I glory in your fame, and I know well that you will go on to greater things. Remember how you overcame the great unhappiness you suffered as a child. Trust in God, who has taken your innocent darling to his rest. Wherever you go, remember your sister is always at your side, proud of all you've done, but prouder yet of what you will do.
I put the letter in my breast, and I laid my weary head upon the grass, and wept as I had not wept since Dora died. From that time, I began to work again. Traddles arranged for the publication of all I sent him, and my reputation grew. And so, at last, I returned home. I had been away 3 years. I arrived in London on a wintry autumn evening and went to Gray's Inn, where Traddles had told me he had taken chambers.
Good God, it's Copperfield!
Copperfield it is. All well, my dear Traddles?
All well, my dear Copperfield. Oh, my dear fellow,
How glad I am to see you. I never was so rejoiced. Never. Oh, good gracious me. When did you come? Where have you come from? What have you been doing? Oh, to think you should have been so nearly coming home, as you must have been, and not at the ceremony.
What ceremony?
Good gracious me, didn't you get my last letter?
Not if it referred to any ceremony.
Why, my dear Copperfield, I am married.
Married?
Lord bless me, yes. What? To Sophie, by her father, the Reverend Horace, down in Devonshire. Sophie, see whom we have here.
Mr. Copperfield.
Mrs. Traddles.
Oh, what a delightful reunion this is. Oh, God bless my soul, how happy I am.
And so am I.
And I'm sure I am.
Oh, Sophie is an extraordinary housekeeper, you know. We have her sisters staying with us now, and you won't believe how those girls are stowed away.
How many young ladies are there here, then?
Five.
Five?
Yes. The whole set of chambers is only three rooms, but we put three girls in that room and two in that. There's a little place in the roof.
It's a very nice room when you're up there, Mr. Copperfield.
And Sophie papered it herself to surprise me. And it's ours at present. My love, will you fetch the girls?
Yes, Tom.
She really is the dearest girl. I went down to Devon, Copperfield, and I pointed out to the Reverend Horace Crooner, who's the most excellent clergyman and ought to be a bishop, that Sophie and I had been engaged for a long time, and that my most earnest desire was to be useful to the family. So if I got on in the world and anything should happen to him or Mrs. Crooner, I'd be a parent to the girls. Well, he was most sympathetic. And though Mrs. Crooner took it rather hard at first, well, she couldn't forgive me for depriving her of her child, we brought her round in the end. And so, my dear Copperfield, I'm now as happy as it's possible to be.
I returned to my night's lodgings, envying my friend his happiness. As I sat before the fire, thinking about him, I gradually fell to tracing faces in the live coals, and remembering my own past life.
Goodbye, Davy. My poor child. Goodbye.
You're going to London, David, to begin the world on your own account.
Young or old, Davy, as long as I'm alive, you'll find a room here for you, as if I expected you directly, men.
Mr. Dick, you will consider yourself guardian, jointly with me, of this child.
Oh, Agnes, you're my good angel. Always my good angel.
If I were, there's one thing I'd set my heart on.
What is that?
On warning you against your bad angel.
Daisy, if anything should ever separate us, you must think of me at my best.
As years went on, my boy would have wearied of his child wife. It is better as it is.
Wherever you go, remember your sister is always at your side, proud of what you've done, but prouder yet of what you will do.
Oh, Trotwood, blind, blind, blind.
The faces in the fire faded. Their voices were subdued. Suddenly, I saw the truth that my undisciplined heart had never recognized. Agnes. I had thought of her as my sister. I had taught her to think so of herself. But now, in my loneliness, I knew that I loved her, not as a brother, and that I could have been blessed beyond measure if I could have made her my wife. Too late. I could not speak to her. I could not bear to lose the smallest part of her sisterly affection, as I must do if I sought to change that affection, so long established, to something else. The time was past. I had deservedly lost her. Blind, blind, blind. Next day, my aunt and Mr. Dick, and my dear old nurse Peggotty, who was now their housekeeper, received me with tears of joy, and my aunt and I, when left alone, talked far into the night. When she'd given me news of all our old friends, she sat back and looked at me thoughtfully.
Trot, when are you going to Canterbury?
I'll get a horse and ride over tomorrow.
Unless you'll go with me.
No. I mean to stay where I am.
I'd have stopped off there today if I'd been coming to anyone but you.
My old bones would have kept till tomorrow. You will find Mr. Wickfield a white-haired old man, but a better man in all respects. And Agnes...
Yes?
You will find her as good and as beautiful as she has always been. If I knew higher praise, I would give it to her. Useful and happy. That's what she wished to be.
How could she be otherwise?
Has Agnes any lover?
She might have been married 20 times since you've been gone.
No doubt. But is there anyone who's worthy of her?
I suspect she has an attachment, Trot.
A prosperous one?
Oh, I cannot say. I've no right to tell you even so much. She's never confided in me. But I suspect it. I suspect she is going to be married.
If it is so, she'll tell me in her own good time. I have always confided everything to her. She will confide in me.
Ah, Trotwood. Seeing you again brings back such memories of bygone days. My part in them is much matter for regret, but I would not cancel them. For that would cancel such fidelity, such a child's love.
Hush, Father.
I understand you, sir.
But no one knows, not even you, how much she has undergone. Dear Agnes, forgive me. I'm an old man now, and I keep early hours. You have much to say to each other without me.
Good night, then, sir.
Good night. Good night, my darling.
Good night, Papa. Do you mean to go away again, Trot?
What does my sister say to that?
I hope not.
Then I have no such intention.
Since you ask me, I think you ought not. Your reputation is growing. If I could spare my brother, perhaps the time could not.
What I am, you have made me.
I have made you?
Yes. You remember the night Dora died?
So young, so loving. Can I ever forget?
I've often thought of you since, as you were then, ever directing me to higher things. That's how I shall see you till the day I die, my dearest sister. But we've spoken of me, and you've told me nothing of your own life in all this lapse of time.
What have I to tell? Papa is well, as you see. We are here in our home. Our anxieties are gone. When you know that, you know all.
All? Is there nothing else? You have a secret. Let me share it.
Trotwood.
If there's someone to whom you've given the treasure of your love, don't shut me out. Let me be your friend. Your brother. Agnes. Agnes, dearest. What have I done?
I am not well. I am not myself. Let me go away. I will write to you.
Oh, I can't bear to see you like this and think that I've been the cause. Oh, my dearest girl, dearer to me than anything in life, if you're unhappy, let me share your unhappiness. For whom do I live now, if not for you?
I am not myself. Another time.
I must say more. For heaven's sake, let's not mistake each other after all these years. I must speak plainly. If you think I could not resign you to a dearer protector of your own choosing, dismiss the thought.
Oh, no. You're mistaken. If sometimes in the past I have been unhappy, the feeling has passed away. If I have any secret, it is no new one and is not what you think. I cannot reveal it.
Agnes.
Yes?
When I came here today, I never thought I would confess this. But if I have really any hope that... that I might ever call you something more than sister. Very different from sister. Agnes?
I cannot speak.
My dearest girl, please tell me if I have any hope. I went away loving you. I stayed away loving you. I came home loving you.
Oh, Trotwood.
Tell me, please.
That was my secret. I have loved you all my life.
Goodness me, Trot. Who is this you are bringing here?
Agnes, of course.
So I see. Agnes, my dear.
Dear Miss Trotwood.
I've been telling Agnes what you told me.
What? Then you did wrong.
You're not angry. I'm sure you won't be when you learn that Agnes isn't unhappy in any attachment. But she is going to be married.
What? Trotwood! Oh, Trot, my dear, dear Trot. Bless you.
Betsy.
Bless you both.
We were married a fortnight later. Traddles and Sophie and Dr. and Mrs. Strong were the only guests at our quiet wedding. We left them full of joy and drove away together. I held in my arms the source of every good aspiration I've ever had, the circle of my life, my own, my wife.
At last I can tell you something more.
Let me hear it.
The night Dora died, she sent for me.
I remember.
She told me she had but one wish and left me a last charge.
What was that?
That only I should occupy her vacant place.
Now my memories are nearly finished. But there is one incident more. Agnes and I had been married 10 happy years. We were blessed in each other and blessed in our children. One spring night, a stranger came to see us, a hale, grey-haired old man, whom I recognized at last as Mr. Peggotty.
That's always been in my mind, ma'am, as I must come and see Master Davy and your own sweet blooming self and your wedded happiness afore I got to be too old.
And how have you fared, Mr. Peggotty? Have you been fortunate?
Very fortunate, sir. We worked, and maybe we've lived a little hard at first, but what with sheep farming and stock farming, we've always thrived.
And Emily?
I wonder if you could see my Emily now, whether you'd know her.
Has she changed, sir?
I don't know. I see her every day, but odd times I've thought so. A slight figure, kind of worn, soft, sorrowful blue eyes, a pretty head, leaning a little down, a quiet voice and way, timid almost. That's Emily.
And is Martha with you yet?
Martha got married. A young man, a farm labourer, made off of her. She spoke to me to tell him her true story. I did, and they were married. And they live 400 miles away from any voices but their own and the singing birds.
And Mrs. Gummidge?
Well, would you believe it? A ship's cook even made offer for Mrs. Gummy. I'm gormed, and I can't say no further than that.
And what did she say?
Well, if you believe me, Mrs. Gummidge, instead of saying thank you, but I ain't going to change my condition at my time of life, she upped with a bucket as a standing by and laid it over that there ship's cook's head till he sung out for help. And I went and rescued of him.
And last, not least, Mr. Micawber.
Oh.
He's paid off every obligation he incurred here, even to Traddles' bill. so we take it for granted he's doing well.
Oh.
But what's the latest news of him?
Well, Mr. Micawber turned two with a Wilshire. I've seen that there bald head of his up aspiring in the sun till I almost thought it would have melted away. And now, he's a magistrate.
A magistrate?
Oh, yes, sir. Ah, I brought this to show you. Port Middlebay, give him a dinner.
Wilkins Micawber, Esquire. Our distinguished guest, the ornament of our town. Well, something has turned up at last.
Now look at the next page, sir.
What? To David Copperfield, Esquire.
Yes. Mr. Micawber made me promise as I'd show it to you.
To David Copperfield, Esquire, the eminent author. My dear sir, though estranged by force of circumstances from the companion of my youth, I have not been unmindful of his soaring flight. I cannot therefore allow the departure from this place of an individual we mutually respect and esteem without taking this public opportunity of thanking you on behalf of all the inhabitants of Port Middlebay for the gratification of which you are the ministering agent. Go on, my dear sir. You are not unknown here. You are not unappreciated. Go on in your eagle flight. The inhabitants of Port Middlebay may at least aspire to watch it with delight, with entertainment, with instruction. Among the eyes elevated towards you from this portion of the globe will ever be found, while it has light and life, the eye appertaining to Wilkins Micawber, magistrate.
Mr. Peggotty lived with us for the remainder of his stay. Agnes and I parted from him aboard ship when he sailed, and we shall never part from him more on earth. Now I look back once more, for the last time before I end my story. Faces crowd upon me. My aunt, an old woman of 80, but upright yet. Peggotty, my good old nurse, her cheeks and arms, once so hard and red, shriveled now, but her finger still rough as a nutmeg grater. My youngest child catches at it as it totters from my aunt to her. My aunt is godmother now to a real living Betsy Trotwood, and spoils her mightily. I see an old man at my aunt's side making giant kites and promising to finish his memorial soon. And I see Traddles, prosperous now, but exactly the same simple, unaffected fellow he ever was. These faces fade away, but one face is above them and beyond them all, and that remains. I turn my head and see it in its beautiful serenity beside me. Oh, Agnes, oh, my soul, so may thy face be by me when I close my life indeed. So may I, when realities are melting from me like the shadows which I now dismiss, still find thee near me, pointing upward.
That was the concluding episode of David Copperfield by Charles Dickens. The programme featured Gary Cady, Miriam Margulies, Harold Innocent, Sheila Hancock, John Moffat, and Susan Sheridan. with Maggie McCarthy, Joanna Myers, David Burke, Andrew Wincott, Irene Sutcliffe, Jenny Howe, Jane Wittenshaw, and Maria Miles. Also Mark Straker, Timothy Bateson, Timothy Spall, Timothy Carlton, Petra Markham, Charles Millam, Alan Barker, Norman Jones, and Peter Penry Jones. The book was dramatised by Betty Davis, and the producer was Marilyn Imrie.